Greg Schaefer, Development Engineering.
Holly St. Pierre, Community Development.
Don Hardy, Bridger Inn.
Steve Beacon, Park Regional Wastewater.
Andrew Gunther, BLS Engineering.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramis.
Terry Wall, Marine Mines Equity Group.
Eric Salima, SGA Engineering.
Nikki Olson, Development Engineering.
Dean Shaddix, Public Works Inspection.
Ron Arriga, Environmental Services.
Mark Damon, observing today.
Marty Stump, Community Development.
All right, thank you very much. For those of you who didn't sign in on your way in, if you could sign in on your way out, we'd appreciate it so we have a record of who attended today. Just a reminder that the DEEB meeting will be recorded and posted onto the county's website. If you have any cell phones, if you could turn them off or to silent, that would be appreciated. Moving on to reviewing and adopting the minutes, I would entertain a motion.
I've reviewed the minutes and I move approval.
Your second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? None seen. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right. Thank you. Review the upcoming events.
A little bit lighter in the month of August. Nonetheless, we do continue to have some events under the board agenda. BOCC hearing, transportation concurrency, and capital facilities plan update. That's upcoming on Tuesday, August the 19th, the morning session, 10 a.m., and work session on surface mining overlay proposed policy code standards in the afternoon there, Wednesday, August 27th, 1:30. That's it for the board. Under the Planning Commission, a hearing, which should have taken place, I guess, unless altered, this evening. Shoreline Master Plan Limited Update this evening, Thursday, August 7th, 6:30. And then also a work session, GIS Mapping Format Review, Thursday, August 21st, evening, 5:30 p.m.
Very good. Thanks, Greg. next item are the correspondences, and in your packet is the information that went out, I believe, in whole to the Board of County Commissioners last week. It was put together by primarily Eric with the help of Jamie regarding the infrastructure percentage for the comp plan, new comp plan coming up, and their request to have the board reevaluate what they are using for their infrastructure percentage. Right now it's 27 point something percent, and the evidence that's been presented in this packet shows it to be more along the lines of 30 to 35%. Anybody want to chime in? Have you guys heard anything from the board since we've submitted that information?
I did get a little feedback from them, and I apologize for not forwarding on earlier.
That's quite all right.
I actually received it before we submitted on letter, so I don't know that it's really feedback from our letter. But I did get a letter that written to Oliver from Ron, who I believe Ron's here, and it was the BDL and assumptions for stormwater facilities. And it has some examples, and based on this, it kind of counters what we had in our letter. But when I look further into the document, I don't know that it really does. And maybe Ron can chime in. But what we were saying is, in the areas of poorly drained soil, that the percentage is likely higher, and higher than the 27.5. And even at the bottom of this letter, it's saying that the numbers range from less than 1% to 15% of the total land need. And it's looking at a lot of different examples. So when I go through the examples, a lot of these projects are ours, so I have a lot of info on those. And a good portion of them are moderately drained. Some of them were vested in the old ordinance, so I don't know that those are necessarily
germane.
Yeah, indicative of what we're going to see under the new ordinance with the higher flow restrictions for the LID standard. So I think we might need to expand on that. If this is counting our letter, maybe even get together with Ron and kind of discuss what it is. And I don't think we have to get opposite ends of the table and staff on it. I think we need to work together. So
Ron, is that something?
Probably the best.
you guys be willing to do it? Yeah, come on up. And
yeah, the memo that Eric was talking about is something I wrote to Oliver that was before what you guys had put out. I think just in general, it's a good idea to reflect back on how the assumptions are holding out at any time. I think for years we've been well under the assumed amount for at least stormwater infrastructure. And stormwater and roads are combined as public and whatever else goes to public. And that was something I mentioned to Oliver as well in my memo, that I didn't look at the roads and the stormwater. I was just looking at stormwater facilities dedicated. But in Eric's right, also binning it by, you know, what codes these went under. And we only recently, since the injunction, started going under the forest and pre-developed conditions. So one would need to probably do, you know, to really support the analysis, one would need to look at developments, sort of not necessarily cherry-pick developments, but look at developments that were done in certain areas under certain codes and just do some case studies and see what it pans out to be. I mean, I don't think it needs to be a statistically significant study, but it should probably be, you know, a little bit more random, I think.
But I got an email back from Commissioner Dorr saying that based on this, they're not willing to change it. And that was before they had our information. They had our preliminary information, but not our final report. So it might take, you know, a conversation from you based on what this letter really was, because if you look at it, it's going with, you know, a storm assumption about 70%. When you go back from what we've looked at, it's 20% is roads typically, and then it's adding another 7.5% for stormwater. And when I kind of look through this, yeah, it ranges from 1 to 15, but for most of these projects, they're all either vested or fairly well-drained soil. And we're not even really disputing the well-drained soil. If anything, the letter we put together said it's probably adequate enough,
Yeah, I mean, those are pretty low numbers, and I mean, it's like, you know, less than 1% in areas that are well-drained, at least for stormwater infrastructure. I haven't had any conversation with the board's office about this particular recommendation. Oliver did send the memo that you guys wrote, or the letter that you guys wrote to me, asking me to comment on it. I haven't done that yet, but my comment to Oliver will probably be, you know, I'm not really going to weigh in on this letter, because without doing this full analysis, I have no idea what the answer is. So we haven't done that yet.
The 27.7, is there a foundation for that? I mean, that's another question.
Yeah,
please. I'm not a BBLM guy.
So back in the 94 plan, it looked like the county was using a much higher number. It was 38%, and that was encompassing a road, storm, schools, you know, BPA easement, sort of the stuff that is public, truly public infrastructure. When they started revisiting that plan beginning in the late 1999, 2001, what had come out of that is that the county had done their own internal audit and had several subdivisions. And then the city of Vancouver sort of did a cherry pick study, I think. And they supported that. The problem is I went back and looked at where those subdivisions were, you know, both in the city and the county. And they're in places that are basically gravel areas that just suck the water down. And so, to me, it's a little bit disingenuous to use those cherry-picked areas. And quite frankly, a lot of the areas that City of Vancouver was also used for study was built prior to any stormwater control. And so there was minimal, at best, stormwater infrastructure on site. Another infrastructure, and certainly we can bring forward all that documentation if need be, but that's sort of the history of it.
Can you save everything?
My own GMA.
There's a different method.
Yeah.
Before GIS, you threw everything in the bucket. Now with the perfection of GIS, we can throw out the EPA, we can throw out parks, we can throw out open spaces and say, okay, of the developable land, how much do you take out for infrastructure deduct? So it is a different metric in the BBLM model.
I think the problem I still, and I'll keep banging this drum, is that there's areas like schools and other public facilities when, you know, just because I've done a couple of these in Camas, where the school district actually buys the Atherton residential project, and that isn't accounted for as infrastructure, but yet it's taken away from residential properties because that's where the kiddos are going to go to school. So there's got to be a reflection of that percentage as well into what we're counting. So I respectfully disagree a little bit with the county.
But as we're looking towards the new comp plan or the comp plan update and looking at the potential of bringing additional property into the GMA or the growth boundary, what's your experiences as engineers is the kinds of soils that are going to be coming in with them? Is it this poor draining, wetter, tighter, heavier silt, heavier clay, or are they more gravelly type soils? I mean, are they?
Well, you look at it, most of it is on that fringe where we're getting out of the well drain. Most of the well drains in the Vancouver kind of orchards area kind of comes out. I mean, that map is pretty indicative of what it looks like. And I think we passed that map here, this one here. So most of it's around battleground energy. That's where most of the urban growth area is. Mm-hmm. And in both those areas, it's usually poorly drained soil. So it's kind of the red areas are the poor drain, yellows moderate, greens excessive.
Okay.
So, and even in the yellow, I think 97 is adequate, if not more than adequate. So what we've seen in the yellow is it costs more, but it doesn't take much more area. So you spread it out, you do bioretention facilities, you do these facilities that are actually in the right way. So you do a lot of underground, maybe you have drain rock or pipe, and you can get rid of it. It just costs more. We're doing a project right now where it's in the yellow, and we are not having to take away any of the area. We're going from the old ordinance to the new. It's just like tripling or quadrupling the cost of the stormwater. So,
because of the LID features that you have to employ?
Yeah, and to get rid of the water, to be forced, I think we're putting a 3,000 foot of perfect.
Gotcha, so there's higher detention requirements. So,
yeah, but we didn't have any perfect before. We just had small ponds. So we're putting it from that.
But you are able to calculate in some infiltration.
Yes, just low.
Okay. Okay.
Depending on how the market's doing, so I'm just thinking out loud. I mean, right now, maybe the developer might make the choice to triple or quadruple the cost, but at some point, the developer might also sacrifice the land. I don't know. I'm thinking about how I feel about tripling or quadrupling my stormwater cost versus losing lots, depending on how the market.
To do it on above ground, lower the cost.
It's all going to be a trade-off.
So do you guys mind working together as you guys are kind of working that out and then maybe come back and report next month? We got a full, but maybe a quick, I don't know when this has to be resolved or if there is any time to have it resolved or what, or if we're just, you know.
I think the critical juncture is the alternatives that are being prepared by the county that at the point that launches, I'm hoping that this is resolved one way or another. Because that's going to set the framework on what you do mathematically and calculating how much land there's actually going to need to be.
Do you know when that might be?
I think the EIS is intended to be completed by next April. Maybe a preferred alternative.
So it looks like there's some time.
There's some time.
Well, maybe we'll just, you know, kind of from a deep standpoint, maybe look at this again in October and maybe have an opportunity to get together over the next couple of months.
Yeah. And it sounds like this kind of went to Ron already, so he's going to be looking at it. And if you want to get together, any questions, I'd be happy to.
I was going to meet with Oliver and just talk to him about, you know, something that I think still needs to be worked out is what does Oliver need, or, you know, to support the recommendation to increase the assumption.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's something people can say, you know, we don't think it's 27.7, we think it should be 35. Can you just change the number and nobody's going to say anything about it? I don't know. But if there needs to be some backup, then I think we kind of need to back up a little bit and start thinking about a supportable analysis that will serve as backup.
We tried to provide something. The challenge we're seeing is there's not a lot of good data out there because a lot of the land in these kinds of areas hasn't been economical to develop. We did find a handful of projects, and we talked to most of the engineers in town, had them submit projects, we compiled the data. And we have more. We probably get like a figures as well. The letter is more of a summary. Mm-hmm. Most of them are the data around the area. Olson provided some great ones. We provided a few more conceptual things. Some even prepared by the county. We just did a little analysis on the area. And I think Sterling provided one as well.
So maybe this is the first step.
What we were able to dig up.
Perfect.
With our efforts. So.
Okay, very good. Anything else on that? All right. I think that was it for the correspondences. Any deed member announcements?
Now that I'm a deed member, I'm my deed member.
Sure, why not? Go for it, Marty.
So, Jim Muir and company, they've developed some fairly innovative services for video inspection. I know Mike Bomar would love to be here to listen in on this. And then alternate inspection hours. So we've put together these little flyers. There are going to be other types of mediums, but there's one that's called SureLook. It's the video inspection. I think it's really intended to use for smaller construction, especially in the outlying parts of Clark County. I think the real benefit here, though, is going to be on some re-inspections, and I think one particular is sheetrock nailing, is what I hear. So this has actually been launched. We've done some trial runs. We've actually had a couple inspections, I believe. The alternate inspection hours is basically putting somebody on an alternate work schedule, so they're working later in the morning until like 7 o'clock at night, something on that order, and then having Saturday inspections. And I think this is mostly for like homeowners and do-it-yourself types. So just informational services. The other thing I wanted to announce is I contacted a fellow that worked with us on our lean process improvements for single family. We're going to be looking at site plan review and short plan review. So I'm going to have Susan Ellinger lead that effort up, and we'll be contacting some of you for your interest in participating through that process. I don't think we're going to spend 5 days. We may spend a couple days, 2-3 days on that, because part of what you do is map your workflow, your process, and we've done that through the tide mark replacement project. So just a heads up that some of you may be contacted. I know Mike, you've expressed interest in that. We have reached out to the Public Works and Environmental Services for their participation, and they will be joining us. So
absolutely.
I'm hoping that we'll see something in maybe October.
Okay.
Maybe by you know, this year sometime, for sure. But October, November would be ideal.
And this is with a consultant that
yes.
you employed to work through the lean process?
Correct.
So I'm going to take a clean look at it. And
correct.
Okay, good. Marty, on these new processes, what are you doing? What's the county doing to get the word out to everyone?
I know we've got something in the BIA newsletter.
Yeah.
We've had some media releases, and I think we've got some of this up on our website. So we're doing what we can to get the word out. We'll probably have things in the permit center.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a quick, and staff will let those yep. people know about it.
Yep, and I think Jim's got something on CBTV, and I think there's going to be something in the Vancouver Business Journal. So we're
okay.
getting it out there.
All right, good. Was this just out of curiosity for the board? Was this in kind of in direct response to Mike's original concept of using technology as a way to make these kinds of processes more efficient?
Certainly, it was a consideration.
Okay.
That happened a couple years ago when we had our
right.
retreat.
Yeah, two or three years ago when we had our retreat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jim really embraces technology. And,
good.
And you know, I think some others have in the state have jumped out ahead of us, but some of it's just having the resources available, and we have it available now. So.
Okay.
Yep.
Good. Well. Having said that, I'd like to maybe give Deeb and specifically Mike Bomar a pat on the back for yeah. coming up with this idea. I noticed that both his name and the board was conspicuously absent from the article in the Vancouver Business Journal. So I just noticed that. That's interesting. Okay. any other announcements?
I do.
Okay. Yeah.
We have. I got contacted by CPU actually on a. I think it was related to a project we're working on, but they had a kind of a question or comment on county process. And what they've noticed is they've run into several occasions where they get into the utility permit stage of a project, or they're ready to make a street cut, stub a utility to a property, and all of a sudden they find out that there's a street cut moratorium or that for whatever reason the county's saying, no, you're not going to cut the street. And so Barry over there mentioned that it seems like, and I don't know if this is already in the engineering review process, but it seems like if there was an opportunity to bring the permit, utility permit people or the right-of-way permit people into that process earlier in the review, it can leave the utilities scrambling at the last minute for, what do we do now? So I'm not sure what we've done on the engineering side as far as other than the very tail end where the CPU or the wastewater district's going for utility permit all of a sudden to get some sort of surprising input as far as street cuts. I don't know if there's a way to incorporate something a little bit earlier into the process so that these don't become last minute issues of trying to find an alternative. Discovering an additional cost.
Mm. Are you talking about primarily commercial projects?
I think this one in particular was a commercial project. If
it's residential, I mean, the roads will still be open for the stuff. So.
It's the more likely scenario, I guess.
Okay.
And I didn't get a chance. This got passed on to one of my employees, so I didn't get a chance to talk to Barry about it. It just came up in the last day, so. But I guess that's a question or sort of an issue that would be nice to explore a little bit on the county side of things.
Would you follow up with him and get some specifics?
Yeah, I'll give you a call.
Because I'm to understand that if there's a street cut moratorium, that usually comes up during pre-app, for instance, when they did 78th Street.
That's if they get their stuff in a lot of times PUDs behind.
Well, so. No. I mean, Public Works will comment on that and say that there's an overlay. There's been an overlay project. There's a 5-year street cut moratorium on there. We usually have to go through a road mod, first of all, to even begin to do it. And then we have to do complete lane restoration on either side.
I know the city's good.
Dean Shattuck's Public Works Construction Inspection, also the utility permitting program, which you're speaking of, is somewhat under my area. There's the county code does allow for a 5-year no-cut moratorium. I can tell you for private development, because it is a very fluid process, the pre-app process may take place 5 years before somebody ever breaks ground. To pick something up at a pre-app stage may be very unlikely. The county's overlay process, year in and year out, which we're in the process of, went through the lean process, we're making some good progress to have a much more, a larger list programmed out a couple years that we can hold to, so there'll be a lot more information there. We have, is since 2000, about almost 14 years worth of experience, I guess. Only had one opportunity where we had to let the individual open cut the road because we could not find another. Well, the City of Vancouver Sewer would not take the cheaper, more accessible route to tie into the sewer. So they still wanted to go out into Ward Road shortly after we built that road. Our county capital program spends a great deal of time, 6-year TIP, those kinds of things. You know what's coming. That information is spread out throughout the community. A lot of good information there. So as those lists are updated, the utility community is very involved in those lists, not only on the capital side, but also on the overlay side. annually, they're asked to provide input on what they have in the design process and their review process. We frequently move overlay projects to allow for development when known development's coming. We work with developers to stub out laterals to allow for the overlay, and then they can come back at a later time, stub on, get them on site. 78th Street, we've done that as well in a couple locations when we overlaid out there once. So there's a lot of work that takes place within Public Works and the utility community to allow for that to happen. I can say that if we did run into a situation with some CPU water on the SCIF project at 39th and 10th Avenue, and Olson, I believe, was the engineer. They did a lot of preliminary work. We started working with them to try to find a serviceable connection in an effort to try to keep them out of the street. We did modify the design slightly, but we weren't able to keep them out of the street completely. So there's a lot of work that takes place on the front end, but for a private development perspective, a five-year moratorium, we'll make every effort to either work with the developer and the utility for an alternative connection, get the utility stubbed out of the road prior to us paving, if at all possible. But for a private development, we have never one time, to the best of my knowledge, not allowed them access. Oaks at 78th Street, we had some issues with some sewer. There were some alternative design issues. The developer didn't want to put as many grinder pumps in and as significant a pump system. Even though there was already a pressure system designed within the development, they didn't want to pressure that many lots. So in turn, we actually did approve to allow them to access 78th Street in the turn lane, which was where the manhole was
right.
And we worked with them to get a design to get to the site. So it's not quite black and white, cut and dry.
Sure.
There's a lot of work on all the parks, the utilities, the county, to find some amicable situation to get everybody serviced. Yeah. We've been pretty successful in doing that. As far as the capital program is concerned, it is a little more cut and dry because there is a lot more advanced notification that goes out. Our real properties folks work with all the property owners up and down the corridor of a capital project. So that information gets out to those property owners far ahead of the capital project. And if there's no development taking place, then there's time to put that together to get out of the way. So hopefully that somewhat addresses
the concern. That's an excellent explanation. We really appreciate that, Dean. I would just ask Andrew if you could talk with that, find out any specifics about it, and you know, it sounds to me like there's already somewhat of a system set up in place to let property owners know and the utility purveyors know what's coming down the road, so that if that needs to take place, whether it be from a private development standpoint or a public development standpoint, that that's happening. And maybe there was just a breakdown in communications at some point in time. So yeah, if you could find out and let us know.
And sometimes projects on the private side come up very rapidly. And,
right.
You know, always
that's true.
To look back 9 months.
My experience has been,
you know, on the overlays. So
like Dean was saying, is that the pre-app happens 5 years before the actual development happens, and then sometime in the interim, an overlay comes through, right. And it's, you know, like when 78th Street was done, uh-huh. You know, we were going through looking at the projects that were slated to go in there. The Oaks hadn't made it to us yet.
Oh, I see.
But it had already gone through the preliminary of the county, so we got stubs put out to all the other developments, and then that one came in, and it was like, you know, this is a new road, don't you? So, and that seems to be where most of those type of issues come up. There's usually a way to make it work, but it does take some time and energy to
right.
to get it done.
Okay. So. Good. Thanks. Anybody else?
Just one more comment.
Sure.
Sorry.
No, that's quite right. That's why we're here.
But I just would like to throw it out there that we are always willing to try, and we'll go the extra mile to work with the community to try to find those alternative connections, work with the design issues and those kinds of things. And if there's at all an opportunity to serve, we've been pretty fortunate, like I said, over 14 years, and I don't know that one time we've ever told somebody that you can't.
Right.
You know, we'll put a development on hold, for example.
Sure. Okay, very good. All right, next up. Jamie and Morgan.
So James and I met
I think it was last week or the week before, and I looked through some of the material that you all had last at the last meeting. Had a couple of discussions with some folks on, you know, what would an acceptable time be to collect impact fees if it's not time of building permit issuance. Your examples kind of were all over the board, at least the examples given last meeting. Wanted to make sure that the system that we have wasn't going to present any problems, and talking with a couple staff people, we're not changing the amount, we're just changing the timing of the collection of impact fees. So this is an excerpt from Title 40, and it's when we collect impact fees, and what I have here is just draft language that would change the timing of collection of impact fees for single family and multifamily projects at the time the sheetrock inspection has been performed and approved. We have in the system an ability to not even accept inspection requests if fees are outstanding, fees that are not paid. So we can kind of put a hard hold on something with, you know, you get a single family, you get a ops multifamily, they get their sheetrock inspection scheduled, it's performed, they're approved, then they have to pay the impact fee, and then whenever other inspections trail. I don't know, production, it's, you know, month to 8 weeks out from the time you get your final occupancy. The thing we don't want to do is at final inspection kind of miss something, have folks move in and then say, oh, you know, you didn't pay this fee, so you're going to have to move out for the weekend or however long. The other thing James and I wanted to do was not really get into putting liens on property or covenants on property. It's just really an administrative burden. And then, you know, with putting a lien on property and then removing the lien, it's, you know, $150-$200, and it's running around getting signatures and recording things with the auditor's office. I've not run this by the treasurer folks or other departments necessarily. I've not signaled anything to the school districts. For the county, impact fees we collect, we expend them with other funds. School districts, because of their funding, their strange funding timelines and windows for construction bonds and things like that, I don't know if they'll have a problem with this or not, but for the time being, I've just thrown this out as draft, and I'll be talking to other folks, you know, in the coming weeks. James, you have anything to offer?
No, I just would echo what Marty said. I think in thinking about it, and I know Jeff had raised some issues with the lien stuff last time, to me this sort of is a sensible compromise where we can get the benefit of the delay, because really after the sheetrock, it's mostly just finished work, which occurs pretty quickly without having to go through this administrative burden of recording liens and releasing them and so on and so forth. So,
and this is just for the tip?
Right now I've got it as impact fees.
All three.
He's got it in all. TIF and, for the county, it would be TIF and PIF.
Okay.
If the school districts are saying time out and they want to raise issues, you know,
that still
we'll have
need
to
collect
that discussion at some point.
Building permit? That would still need to be collected
at
building permit.
At the issuance of building permit.
Okay.
If they raise issues, I'm not sure if they're going to raise issues or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a lot of good, their main concern to me is whether or not they would be getting their checks. And to me, this is sort of another, since we're moving it back one step, it's another backstop to ensure that they will be paid their money and it isn't being paid at closing.
Right.
Yeah, that's the one thing it doesn't do. I think one of the concerns was if the builder didn't have to finance it at all. In this case, they still have to finance it.
Yeah, sorry.
It's still in there. It's still in the loan.
You're delaying it process 3 months or so. Then.
Yeah. When you're doing a loan fee, you pay an amount of loan, so you're paying a service. So you still have an interloan fee. You can't basically skip a step.
Yeah.
So it's just later in the first step. Where it goes to closing, it skips that whole step. Or it goes right to and using basically. So, but it's good, but it doesn't address as part of it. It doesn't address having an extra staff.
And I think that was sort of the balance, I think, here a little bit. Do we go the full way, but then have all this other administrative burdens and means and not? I mean, because that's going
to
cost our guys.
I don't see there'd be a way to do it without a means of security. Yeah. If I was in the county spot and I was deferring them to occupancy, I would want to know there was some kind of lien that paid off at closing. Otherwise, you know, there's no vehicle in there to make sure it happens. It's going to get missed. So, and the title company is kind of to see something physically on it, but it is going to be, you know, a lien or something. So it's kind of a trade off. Would you rather have a lien and skip the step, or would you rather just pay it later in the first step? So I don't know, it's a trade off.
What's your take, Jeff?
I think we need to talk to it's a tough one. I know what I'd do, which would be, I mean, I like the rationale behind this. I think liens really are going to raise a lot of issues. The problem is the cost-benefit analysis of this. How much does it do enough good to really put this in? I don't know that. And so if you go through bank financing, which a lot of people don't have, if you go these days, but if you go through bank financing, then, I mean, Eric's right, it'll be in your loan fee, but you'll save interest, but banks will be paying interest as it gets pulled out. Private financing generally will charge interest on the entire amount of the loan,
regardless
of when you pull it out. You know, and there's arguments for that. Not all private, but I mean, that's my understanding of private financing, they'll charge. So you're going to be paying interest on that. It's there. And Sheetrock is fairly early on in the construction as well. So it's just, you know, to me, it's a cost benefit. I do think the lien problem is going to be a huge hassle. I think it's going to be a hassle for banks, and it's going to be a hassle. If someone mentioned putting a note on a plat or something. I'm not sure if it's another. And I don't think, I agree. I'm already shaking his head. I agree. No, I don't think that's going to work either. So I don't see any way around the lien other than it sounds like some counties maybe weren't doing liens, or I don't know how counties were handling it, or they just were not issuing occupancy. I don't know. I guess my take is I'm not sure. I love the intention. I just don't know that it's really going to be that
beneficial.
Well, I agree. I mean, if you're going to, I mean, the benefit is if you can, as Eric put that to the end of the transaction where that's being really truly paid out by the buyer's funds,
yeah.
Then you're not building it in. You know, I think that the funding today, we're not here as, you know, we're not lenders, but today it is shifting more to bank financing, or there are private entities that also are funding things differently because there's such competition for funding. But there is much greater benefit on the lien side for the builders. They're used to dealing with mechanical liens and things of that nature, so I don't think that's a big deal on their side. Obviously, for the county, that creates a burden. There's fees associated with it, which obviously would have to be compensated with that lien release. Maybe there's an opt-out. You know, you can pay it up front and you save this much. You pay, and then if you don't, there's a lien release fee that's going to be tacked on. You know, again, that creates a layer of complication. But there is a benefit if you can have it towards the tail end that really does help. And I know that that's what the intent of this whole discussion was. There's some benefit to this in interest dollars, but it's marginal.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
It's about
it is, and I like occupancy, but sometimes, you know, I mean, I especially know. With specs and things, you know, occupancy could be a long time out. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Now, what do you guess on an average time to drywall inspection from when you start the house? So what is that delay? What does it say? 2 months?
2 months.
2 months.
2 months?
Yeah.
And
6 days.
Yeah. So let's say your impact fees are about $15,000. Probably about right in most areas. So 15,000 at like 7%. Maybe if your construction loan's that high, that's pretty high. It must probably lower, but that's what the finance cap. So it saves you 2 months interest on
that amount.
15,000. So it's, you know, it becomes marginal. It's a lot of time, but it helps a little bit. Whereas that skipping the whole step means you didn't have to pay that $15,000 at all. It comes out closing. It's one of those you don't feel. You know, when you're paying your commissions on your sales, like when you sell a house, it
comes out of closing, you don't feel that as much as when you have to write a second check twice.
Well, the reality is the bigger thing too is the down payment requirement, and it lessens the down payment requirement if you're not having to calculate it in the loan because it comes out of the back end. That's the bigger benefit is when you can bring it out of the down payment requirement. The cash side that you have, that the builders bring on the front end is the real painful part in all lending situations. So that's where the real benefit comes in. So if you take that out of it, the interest hold is helpful as far as the savings and the interest, but that down payment help too, that makes a big difference.
That's a big one, because banks right now, they want about 40%.
That's the heavy part.
You have to put in cash to just do the deal, and you can finance about 60%. So if you have a larger amount of your financing, it ties up with cash.
So, Jamie, how does this also?
I guess I'm looking for direction.
No, I know. My next question was, how does this tie in with the potential for the state legislature to enact? We're not. But we're kind of getting ahead of the game here. Should they not go forward with
this regard?
But if they do and they have something different, first question would be, does this trump that, or if that says something else, do we still have this to follow this? Meaning, if for some reason they say, yeah, it can be held off until occupancy, and you tell me, is that even a remote possibility of legislation?
Again, I'm reading the tea leaves here. My crystal ball is awfully foggy. But I can assure you that while this will be an issue reintroduced as another piece of legislation in this session, it is not the number one priority of the home builders like it has been in the past 2 years. The number one issue is lot inventory. And that's being driven by lack of them.
Right.
So, to me, I think, again, we have an opportunity here in this county to do something that should be done. And like I said, we already have the litany of other jurisdictions throughout the state that have done something on this. I think with this proposal at Sheetrock, I think we're trying to find that balance between not having to do this lien and working with the county's Tidemark system, which is evolving to something else, giving something on our industry side to help us out.
What have you heard from your constituents, for lack of a better term?
Well, I think that they would just like to see something. And this is what it is. If we feel like it should be final occupancy, I think we can push that. And I don't see.
Then the financial surety question will be
certainly come up again.
And then we'll have to pay a fee with that.
I just ran some quick numbers: 7%, 15,000 impact fees, 2 months, it saved you $175. So is it really worth it to? Yeah, I mean, really, time to come in and have someone come in and pay a fee again, just the manpower to do it. It might not be, it's a negligible savings where, so maybe it's a choice. Maybe, some people don't want liens on it. And liens to me, it can sound like a bad word because, it's like you get paid a bill, you get a construction lien. It's different than like a lien where even having a mortgage on it's considered a lien, so it doesn't have to be something negative. But if you have a choice, you either you want to pay it later and you put the lien on there, or you don't, and you pay it all up front. Having three choices, probably too many.
Because the other choice is to delay it. To delay it and pay it in interest, isn't that correct? So there is a security. They can pay a security right now. And that's already in the code, right?
And that was for school impact fees. Yes, the school impact fees pay the original amount and then the difference at closing.
Well, it says for the transportation impact fee, the developer
tips.
Yeah.
Tips only.
Okay.
Tips only.
Yeah. And we're talking about potentially all three fees. Yeah. So I guess my question to the people that are in the industry is that is it is this a step in the right direction? Is it not even worth it? Or, you know.
Well, that's what I say, to get more.
And I know that Jamie's looking for direction. And I'm
right, I'm having a hard time doing it.
I would say it's not worth it. Yeah. I would say we either go the full way or we don't. That would be my input.
I would too, but I'm hesitant to say that.
I appreciate the effort. I don't mean to diminish that, but that would be my input.
And I would say that too, but I'm hesitant in that. That may mean a lot to, or that, you know, other builders may have different structures, or there may be smaller builders, or even larger builders. Builders different than I am, or whatever, that this may make a big difference to. So I don't know if there's a way we can pull kind of the BIA people. I guess in part of DEEB, I'm thinking what direction to give, you know, because in my mind, we're representing the county as well as this, you know, trying to give some good advice, and I just don't think it's worth it. Right now, I just don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, I think Marty had a suggestion. I think maybe we hit the pause button on the discussion for this month, and I'll go. We presented this as an option to you. We don't have any clear guidance from you guys, and I'll pull our builder members.
Because you may find that there's a lot of builders that the letter is to say, you know, this is great. I don't know. I'd be surprised, but. I
look at $175 in savings, and the county's effort having to sit at the counter to pay three times instead of twice, because you're still paying part of your fee, or maybe not, it's just twice, but because you pay your inspection fee, or your, I'm sorry, not your inspection, you pay your plan review fee.
And building permit issuance.
And then if the school district doesn't know, you're still paying your school fee then you come back again to pay your transportation. So, I mean, you have to staff people to set the counter and people in line for that time. And unless there's a huge savings, like getting rid of that whole step and deferring it to closing, I don't know if the county's that pretty good.
Well, the reality is, too, is if you increase the county's staff time to handle those, then you end up increasing the permit cost, then do you really save, or did you just actually maybe you cost yourself money? So that's the reality. That's
well, you're going to cost yourself money, but it's going to be a cost shift, right? And that's going to go to the home buyer.
That's if you go with the all or nothing.
The all or nothing.
Yeah. The all or nothing is worth it, in my opinion. But the in between, given the things that work, the time consumption for staff to be.
So two questions asked your builder members on the all or nothing is: do you push on the school district impact fee? Because that's a big piece. They're going to push back. I know that for a fact. Yeah. And then what's the financial surety? And how much do you want to ask for that? Because pushing off to them makes our treasurer nervous. So two questions.
Well, the question I need to ask you is, like, where does it stand in relation to your lenders, too? You've got to make sure builders think that all the way through.
Yeah.
Some builders have to think that all the way through. Not that they go. Is there any room for manipulation, too, just not to, you know, dig on the building industry, but is there any room for manipulation? Are you concerned about that in terms of putting off drywall inspection or doing something? You're not concerned about that?
Not in the system, no. We can put hard bolts on,
okay.
A new home or an apartment complex. We can call in for an inspection. And if we have in the system that a certain fee has not been paid, you can't even request an inspection.
That's one of the other things I thought about. What about if it was at the call for final inspection? Would that be better?
For final inspection?
Threshold?
To call for the county to come down and investigate. To me, that might be one stop short of having to have a lien on it and closing.
The lien could create a, the one thing is that somebody has their loan, one of the things is that for banks, if somebody has a loan in place, banks and title companies can get real sensitive to the fact of if you put a lien on the property before it's closed, so sometimes people file for a permit prior. I guess when that won't be until the time to pick up the permit, though. So that's when that lien would go in place, I would assume. So then you probably would be okay. I'm just thinking banks are sensitive to the fact of, is this lien being applied? Is it in first position or second position? So those are some things too.
That's what Jeff's concern was last time, and I think that's why we came back with this proposal to try to mitigate for that instance, just eliminate the lien from the equation.
I mean, ideally, it would work like your real estate excise tax. Mm-hmm. When you close the document, you have to pay it.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
There's no lien on a REIT.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know how mechanically or legally that would work, but that's...
That would be...
And I think that's what's been...
A great way to apply to the legislature. So.
There's another wrench to throw out there. There's different kinds of loans. There's convertibles. So there's one where you get your construction, and then it converts to long-term financing. There's no trigger to take that lien off to pay the impact fees. So it's a different situation, because there's no closing once the house is done. It just goes to the same person. So say a custom home, that's that type of, that can be a convertible. And there's not that extra closing that would pay the fees. So it is complicated, you know?
That's why it's not. It goes unpunished.
I hate to bring that up.
Just leave it the way it is.
How many people are using that the deferral program?
No.
Anybody?
No.
None?
It makes sense in commercial.
No.
But not for residential.
Well, why don't you maybe come back next month or something like that? see what more of the builders have to say. I think they're going to be the ones that would use the program. They're going to be the ones that need to chime in.
Yeah, let me pull some of our builder members, and we'll come back in September with something.
October, you wanted to buy the loans, right?
Well, I don't know what my annuals are going to float, but we'll get it down before buying.
All right.
If we have something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Anything else on that? Nope. All right. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Okay. The development inspection and stormwater fees. Next up. Who's presenting this?
I think Eric was leading out, but input by all listed.
Okay,
there.
Okay, great.
Sure. There was a motion probably about a year ago, and I had it written down on my material stone. It was basically revisit the new fee.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And look at more efficient and effective ways to provide the service. So I know from our last discussion, a few things came up. One was the amount that we're charging doesn't correlate to the effort that the county's putting into inspection of road control. Two, is there a way to do it more efficiently, looking at cross-training inspectors so we don't have to have someone also go out there for road control versus inspecting the site for other things. And I think the third piece was that builders right now are getting hit three times for road control things. They're required by the state to have a CECL on site, so you have to pay someone to be your own representative inspecting your road control. You're doing your own testing. So you're paying somebody to be out there doing that. Then you're paying the county to inspect it, and then you're paying the state to inspect it. So there's this triplication of erosion control. And in some cases, you know, it might be warranted, but right now, especially small projects in the summer, there's really not a huge erosion control. Maybe looking at making sure your sites are watered so you don't kick up a lot of rain.
Eric, sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
You had number two. You talked about the amount charged and whether the service that was provided by the county was actually equal to that.
Yeah.
And what was the second item that you mentioned?
The second one was, is there a more efficient or effective way to do the cross-training staff? And then the third was just, it was more of a statement that it's tricky right now. So, and then I had a bunch of, I'm just kind of looking at it. This was a significant fee added, and it makes a huge difference on really small projects. I had one project, it was an example, it was a $10,000 construction job. It was just a great firm, basically. They were filling in an old road and moving it. And the erosion inspection fee was $1,480, and the erosion control fee was $2,748. So when that fee got kicked in, it was a 286% increase in what the fee was prior to the erosion control. And I know on this job, because it was so small, I don't even know if anyone came out. I think there was one inspection done. So there was a lot done. There was a maintenance warranty, issuance fee. And in that particular job, this isn't maybe always the case, but maybe there was an hour spent on inspection total. And those work out, because some jobs take way more, some less. But it just hit the sweet spot of the permit where you're just over, so your minimum fee is triggered, and basically you're about 2,400 minimum if you're over 10,000 square foot. So this was a significant one. I did a few other ones. In most cases, it raised the fee by between 40 and 60% from the original just inspection, because you got a bunch of different. I had someone in my office just pull like a bunch of fee requests, and here's 163, 48, which has basically increased if the control fee wasn't there. So it's significant.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually on most jobs, it's about 5,000, 3,000, 6,000, that's the issue, and those are kind of what we discussed previously. So then I'll kind of hand it over to discussion.
Yeah, I guess I looked at it not in quite as much detail as Eric, but like he mentioned, once you get over a very, very small amount of disturbance, you're $2,500, you know, automatic for a minimum erosion control inspection fee. And I think about it in terms of some rural short plats, and sometimes you've got, let's say you've got a big buffer between your property boundary and the disturbance area, you may not even have silt fence out there. You may have enough space for just the natural remaining vegetative buffer. Basically doesn't necessitate much of anything at all. And I look at somebody paying $2,500 for that. I think my understanding of the county inspectors, and I can definitely be corrected in this room.
and they're right behind you, Andrew.
So the inspector comes out, does basically a pre-construction inspection after the contractors put in some silt fence, construction entrance, maybe some inlet protection. And then from then out, I think it's primarily, yeah, they're going to be watching to make sure that things are maintained as they visit the site to do other inspections associated with the construction in an average process. And from what I talked to Eddie a little bit, and it sounds like, generally speaking, it's the same inspection crew that's doing the construction inspection on the improvements. So on a pretty small disturbance site, you know, they're making sure that the ground cover is in place, the protection is still in place. They're spending a very small incremental amount of time increase and should be able to, for the most part, do that routinely with their other work on the site. So so I look at, you know, $2,500 on a small site where they may be out two or three times. One that's really dedicated to erosion control, and the remainder are pretty much just a part of the rest of the erosion control or of the inspection process. It's a struggle for me to see where that cost is lining up. Now, I'm looking at maybe a special project, quote unquote, compared to a normal project in terms of this big cost. And I guess it spurs the question of is there some other way to deal with the fee table that makes more sense? And I know that some projects are going to take more effort, and a lot of that's going to be who's the contractor and are they taking care of their end of the deal. To me, at some point, you got to ask, is it that we just need to look at really a time and materials process on this? I mean, but I know on small projects I can see that this fee just doesn't make sense. I think we're just looking to talk about it really today and think about it some more. But that's kind of my input.
I would say absolutely we're open to looking at this. Fair is a good word. I think all parties that are brought into this should feel like, you know, the services, the cost of those services commensurate, you know, with the work that's required. I think, and Diana and I were chatting a little bit earlier today, even in some of the language, it's kind of, or at least some of the discussion at the time was, we are launching a new program. If we find some gaps, some nuances, some wrinkles, you know, let's bring it back in and look at it. So just to open to ideas here, maybe this is something that we look at on a subcommittee level. I don't know, Mike, your thought on that, but I think at a minimum on the county side, we'd want to, of course, bring in community development, construction management, inspection, clean water, ourselves, and development engineering, and then, of course, anybody from the DEED membership that would like to join us on that, and maybe to kind of get our arms around maybe the targeted concerns that may be with it. I wasn't here at the time. I'm going to presume that when the initial program was set up, there, I'm presuming there was at least a fairly rigorous work at this, or was there? I don't know. I just wasn't here at the time. In terms of working with DEEB, other departments within the county, I'm presuming also there was at least somewhat of a formal approach to the board on this.
I think
work sessions and the like.
This may have been one of those situations where the program was so different than what was previously in place. You almost have to see it in practice.
I think it happened very quickly when they adopted the new stormwater ordinance, that the state basically delegated all this to the local jurisdiction to have these programs in place. They put the program in place, they had the fees in place, and then interestingly, the state really didn't release it. They didn't delegate. They delegated and they retained all their own process as well. So then there's a duplicate and with the CSL triplicate. So it's not working in practice necessarily.
Yeah.
The county does have more work that they have to do. They have to monitor things under the permit. So they have to ensure that the road control's in place and not going to be able to weigh in. But they do have due responsibility. So I think part of it is justified. The way I remember it happening is this just came out as here, this has to happen because it was a scramble and we'll revisit it later. And
here we are.
That's, I think, what we're doing.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. We'll see how it works in practice. Yes.
Yeah. Can I make a couple comments?
Absolutely.
Ron, just for some history about where the fees came from, because it's partly related to the permit, it's partly not. Up till 2012, our clean water program funded inspectors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And with our financial situation changing quickly, the board had directed us to try and reduce some of that. So the proposal at the time by board direction was to create a fee for that inspection rather than have the clean water program subsidize that inspection. That's kind of where that came from. I just want to make a quick comment. I won't comment too much about the fees because it was something that, you know, the fees don't come to us. We don't do the inspections. And, you do have to take a look at the fees, and you guys all work in business. You know how salaries, benefits, overheads, you come up with a rate. You kind of have to look at what people are getting charged and then say, is someone really spending 25 hours on my site? You know, that needs to be looked at. But the third point that Eric made is a good one, but we're kind of constrained to what we can do about it, about the multiple hits. The CECL that the developer or the contractor needs to keep on site is not there just to do inspections. They're there to control the site. They're there to control the BMPs. You know, these erosion control plans are fluid. They change every day. They could. And so that person's job is not to just do inspections, is to really control the site, maintain the BMPs, and run the site. We are required by our municipal stormwater permit to inspect sites for erosion and sediment control, and we can't allow self-inspection and reporting, so we do have to send someone out there. But that has to be set. Again, how many times does that person have to go out there? You know, we need to make the fees appropriate with that. And then the third piece, the state, we can't control that. They do require coverage under their construction stormwater permit. That's a Clean Water Act requirement. And they will occasionally do inspections on their own. I will just sort of anecdotally say that more recently in the last year, the state has been engaging us about their own inspections and coordinating more and saying, hey, we went out to this site, the erosion control was a mess. What did you guys see in your inspections? And we've actually responded to several records requests lately from Department of Ecology wanting to see our inspection records to compare with their inspection records. So it's something we've had to be more aware of and more diligent about. But I don't really see the multiple hits going away. Again, I see the county's inspection and the state's inspection as redundant. The contracted CECL on site has a different job.
Does the state inspect as often as the county?
No.
How often? What's the difference in how often they go out there?
You know, I've actually asked.
2-1, 3-1.
Maybe once a project.
Maybe once a project from the state.
Not always.
If. I've asked them for what is their target for inspections, and they don't have one. Okay. But it's definitely less frequent.
And why can't you allow self-reporting?
Well, our permit won't allow us to. We have to have records on site that we did the inspection as oversight. So we can't allow the self-reporting.
There's some self-inspections that are required on the permit, though, the turbidity meters and self-reporting that they have to do. That's part of their job. I don't think you get those numbers, do you?
No, they don't report them.
The state site.
Yeah, I mean, if all the stuff at the state is under their own construction, the general construction stormwater permit, and we can't control that. So, I mean, Eric's third point is definitely a valid one, but I wouldn't spend a whole bunch of time there other than the working on the fees and the amount of time inspectors are on site is important.
I think what's inside of our control is trying to figure out how to do it efficiently and effectively and cross-training. So I think that's, and then how the fees are handled that way. And I guess the question I have to staff is, does the county have a separate inspector for erosion control? How are you doing?
Just to address that issue in an effort to streamline that and make it more financially feasible for everyone, we do not have multiple people going out there.
Yeah.
So there is the inspector that does go out will do the erosion control inspections and what we term construction inspections on the same site at the same time, split their time accordingly. Is what they've been asked to do.
So you guys do track that then?
Yes. Separately.
I think the inspections are already streamlined. That's what I suspect. I think they have. They figured out the most efficient, effective way to do it.
One
detail might be behind.
Please don't take this the wrong way, but this is something that we've run into. It's a little bit problematic on our side from the inspection standpoint. But there is a fee that people are paying to have a CECL represent licensed and bonded contractors when you are doing work in Clark County. We've contacted CECLs in an effort to try to address erosion control problems on sites. That person doesn't know anything about the project, hasn't touched one foot on the project. We have people selling their CECL cards for $50 so that they can represent somebody's project. Now, I know that doesn't happen completely across the board, but it's far more, regular occurrence than it is kind of an anomaly. The state is actually, if you're not already aware, the state is actually researching the possibility of pulling CECL certifications in the event that they're not adequately representing the development or the project. Right now, there's nothing in place to support that. So that's just something that's going on because a lot of that stuff is actually happening. So if you are paying for a CECL on your site, make sure you get the money for it. And I do agree that the fees on our end should be addressed and looked at. So.
Do you guys have time tracking data on how much more you spend in erosion? I'm sure it varies from job to job.
It varies job to job, and it varies basically on the weather and that type of stuff. And obviously, you know, I mean, small projects versus large projects, problematic contractors, those types of things. But we can pull activity reports on particular projects.
I missed what you said. I connected. If you have a CECL on the project, what was that?
If you're paying for a CECL on a project.
We have to, don't you?
Someone's paying for it.
If somebody's paying for a CECL project, make sure you're getting your money's worth. Because right now there are projects that are out there that there people are saying that they're the CECL projects, and apparently Eric was stating that they're paying these people to represent the project, and they're
aren't
doing very much.
Most of the larger contractors have their own.
Yes, correct.
I know there's a few offices that are CECLs for hire.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt it.
No, it's a beautiful job to do it right. It's a tough job.
Yeah.
So just a quick question for the inspection group. I'm glad you guys are here. If you have $100 that you spend on inspection, what percentage of that $100 do you think is spent on erosion control on average?
Depends on the job.
Yeah.
Ballpark. Totally depends on the job. It's project specific, honestly. It depends on the soil conditions, where you are, how much time you actually need to do it, who your contractor is. without throwing people under the bus completely, I probably should stop there.
Yeah. You are being recorded.
Right now, it completely depends on the project. And obviously, the size of the project, you're going to spend more time and have more problematic areas. If there's sensitive areas around, it's going to be more problematic.
Would it be helpful to Deeb if we did pull together a subcommittee, maybe look at this, you know, offline, come back and report to Deeb at least on a periodic basis, you know, progress, main points that we're working on, that sort of thing? And
I think that's exactly what it sounds like needs to be done. I mean, a lot of information has been provided today. I've certainly learned more about erosion control and inspections than I've ever known, at least as far as the ins and outs and the nuts and bolts of it. But this has been something that Eric's been talking about for 2 or 3 years or more. And it sounds like now is the right time to kind of tackle it, at least from and tackle what we can tackle. I don't even know if there's anything from a legislative standpoint that we could do from the ecology, with what ecology does. And so, I mean, there's not even any point, I don't think, in going there.
No, we're not making a point. There's only certain things in our control that we have to focus on. That was right. A waste of time.
So maybe you look at the fees, you know, and what would be good to start off with that is to, you know, gather some data about how long inspections have taken on certain size projects. You know, you mentioned the rural
project by project. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like the biggest issue is with the base fee of the 1 acre.
That first $2,000,
right?
Which just looking at it looks a little odd to me that, you know, the first acre is 2,000, then it goes down by 2/3 to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize you front end loaded that with the pre-construction inspections and stuff like that, but it still seems a little high. And maybe if you pulled some data on the projects that fell under just under that base $2,450 permit cost, and say, okay, what was the inspection effort on those projects to see if there really is a, you know, a large amount of time spent.
Right.
I know from our perspective, just as a utility, you know, the small projects oftentimes end up being the worst for us. I mean, they're the biggest money losers for us, because the smaller the project typically means the smaller developer, so there's a lot less
sophisticated.
There's a lot more handholding on the developer and contractor's standpoint, because these are the people who are, they're novices basically, and they don't know all the processes. They hire the cheapest contractor they can find, and
right,
usually has the same last name as the developer. So you end up, I mean, that's just the, from on the ground, that's what we see a lot of times, is the smaller the project, actually the more work it is for us on a per area basis. The big projects are the contractors and developers who know what they're doing, and we really don't have a whole lot of handholding for them.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, I think step one in my mind is it'd be interesting to see. I think this is the original fee structure. And I think, you know, Sue put that together with whoever else that she had to go. It'd be interesting to see how is that going with real?
There must have been a basis behind it, and
sure,
see how the assumptions that established that basis pan out with what reality has been over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, there was one other issue I forgot to bring up, and I think that's already resolved. I think Greg mentioned it, but it's worth mentioning. There was a situation, there's a case where if you did a really great permit, you pay erosion control inspection fees. Then when you go to open final, duplicate them. I think you guys resolved that.
Yeah.
There is some additional effort because if it takes
right.
longer,
yeah.
the site's opened up for longer. So
yeah.
there's differences. Sometimes the grading's done, that means they don't have to do it, and the site's not opened up. In other cases, if the grading permit, it sits for years, they do it again, you have area opened up again, there's more erosion potential. So I think you guys got that resolved.
Yeah.
Yep.
At least the question that came into us, yeah, we took care of that.
Yeah. Is there any policy based on that? Or no?
I think it mainly was just a clarification of the policy that's already in place. It wasn't our intent to have a duplication of the base fee charge. You know, again, there is a term in there, the 1 year term. So, yeah, I think once we got that clarified, then the applicant was okay with us on that one.
Yeah,
So as far as a subcommittee for this, I would assume that Eric and Andrew would be members from Dean, of course, Greg, Dean, and whomever else. If you guys would work with each other
okay.
on that directly, and then maybe come back to us in a couple of months and report back. Because I think that you really need to hear from everybody, the people in the field, people in the office, the people paying the fees, to really get a good sense of this. And I don't think that that really is what took place when this was developed originally.
Right. Let's do that. Marty, anybody out of your group, do you need to...
No, not
on that one?
Our fees are peanuts.
Okay. All right. Ron, anybody out of... Do you need to... I just want to make sure we're not leaving anybody out if they want to be on this. You're okay without?
Yeah. No,
okay.
I think we can be part of that.
All right.
Good. Okay. And then we'll hear back from you guys October-ish, November-ish, I would imagine.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that pretty much takes care of our agenda for the day. Was there anything else on anybody's agenda that they wanted to discuss?
Just before I mention something, member announcement or now. I noticed that we're on the schedule, or I'm on the schedule for the final plat process next month.
Yes.
So Eric has sent me all the communication and different things, and it actually has been a fair amount of work done. I think memories are just kind of foggy. I'm going to try to get everyone back together for a meeting. I hope I can do that. I'm fighting summer months, including my own schedule.
Sure.
I hope I can do that.
Okay.
So my report is probably going to be really short, saying we either had a meeting or have a meeting scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to get this final plat process rolling again. I need to take a look at all the stuff that Eric sent me. It's great information. And a fair amount of stuff, a fairly large group of people involved.
Right. We will have a full agenda next month, and it sounds like...
I'm not going to be real long on this, but yeah.
Right. October's filling up, too. Got a few things there, so this is working out for everyone. Any public comment from anyone? None seen? We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right, thanks so much.
Oh, it's nice to
have a hint of it.
Yeah.